The Local Thread. Welcome to Toledo Works. I'm your host, Stephen Zenner, an investigative reporter with the Toledo Free Press. I, along with Jaden Jefferson, will be bringing you a glimpse into the working lives of Toledoans each week. Today's topic is tech in Toledo, and we'll be talking to Mike Vanderpool, who's in the studio with me. He's an assistant professor of design at Defiance College, founder of Anthony Wayne Innovations and Design. And a little bit later, we'll be talking to Justin Beaudry, founder of the Toledo Codes. So how are you doing, Mike?
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
Just wanted to get a few things out of the way first. So how did you get into tech?
As a kid, I was fortunate that the grade school that I went to, Trinity Lutheran, shout out, up in Monroe, Michigan, we had some Apple IIe's inside of a computer lab. So I don't know what grade it was, but in grade school, I got to play with Logo and some other math-based asteroid shooting games. And then I was also fortunate, my mother worked as a CPA and was able to bring home like a computer, hard to describe, but basically like a desktop box with a flip-down keyboard and a 4-inch computer screen. Took to computers early on. My first computer was a Tandy Color Computer 2, and it's been kind of a career playing around, nerding out with tech ever since.
That goes pretty far back. So yeah. What about those kind of, I don't want to say primitive, but I think a lot of people would consider those kind of older models. What attracted you to those?
Well, they were state of the art back in the day, right? I mean, this was the cool stuff, right? And I was always the person who had the first Nintendo. I had a Nintendo before I even had a game for it. So for whatever reason, maybe it's our alien ancestry or whatever, but somehow, some way, the idea of playing with electronics was really infused in me. I like taking things apart as well. Mm-hmm. So taking apart bikes and everything else like that, I could never put things back together, but I would take a computer apart and kind of be able to put that back together. So just this idea of exploring and trying to understand how things work, I think is foundational to a lot of that. And tech offered just a lot of opportunities where things were cool, right? Bright flashing things on a screen, type in some commands, stuff actually happens. That's just part of, I think, my makeup of somebody who likes to FAFO, for lack of better words.
You didn't start, your career didn't start in tech, though. You were in marketing initially, is that correct?
It actually started in tech. And tech is such a weird word, right?
So yeah.
My first job out of high school was crushing beer cans. phenomenal job.
As all great tech startup people start.
I had done I'd taken architecture classes and was fortunate enough to have a computer-aided drafting class my senior year of high school for architecture. My first, air quotes, real job was for a company called Designer's Edge, which was designing special equipment for automotive industry and Lazy Boy, specifically up in Monroe. So I'd had a lot of experience using computers to design electrical systems and then also mechanical mechanics.
So you had kind of a few things going parallel, it sounds like, at the same time. You had a number of design, you had tech, just like, it sounds like just playing around with things and experimenting.
It was a lot of just figuring things out. Like that first job, there was four of us in the office, two electrical engineers, one mechanical engineer, and then me, who was just kind of given drawings that were sketched up and marked up to actually correct the drawings in the digital space. The two electrical folks were usually out in the field working, which led me to having to be involved in like purchasing, selecting parts. And that was like Windows 3.1 computer, first part of the internet, big, huge Granger catalog, some Allen Bradley catalogs, just like, okay, we need this part. Mike, figure out how to get it here.
That sounds starkly pragmatic. What excited you about that? I think a lot of people...
It paid really well.
let's
be honest, right? Well, it paid well, and it was cool, and I was learning.
And
new, and I was learning, I should say.
And what kind of, you talked a little bit ago about like kind of the 80s and 90s, you know, video games that were really interesting to you. What part of like, was it the file management? Was it like the fact that you could just like pull things up and communicate with people in like a very organized way? Or what fascinated you about, you know, like kind of working in that kind of a space where you were like looking up parts or like doing the inventories or like cataloging information? Or
I think it was equal parts brain work and then manual work, right? Like okay. Understanding how a machine was built and then how the electrics made that machine do what it does was pretty fascinating, right? And trying to understand like both the concrete nature and the abstract nature kind of coming together, understanding the wider system of how systems operate. Mm. But then also like really I got to work with, because Premier Industries was a small shop, Designer's Edge was an even smaller shop inside of that, I got time on the floor with the people who are actually building the machines. Mm. So and we're going to be using the machines. So really got to understand not just, okay, we're going to design this thing, but how are the people who are going to use it, how are they going to actually use it? So that holistic kind of like understanding of making cool stuff, I think was probably second to the pay.
Okay.
When it comes to how so, exciting it was.
So it paid well, but you also, it sounds like you were working as an interface. You were interfacing with people, you were on the shop floor, you were able to interact with people who are actually doing kind of the work and taking like a catalog of their needs and putting that into what you were developing.
Yeah. Not so much at that first job. I mean, when I worked at Designer's Edge, I got to go into some Johnson Control plants to see how they seat track assemblies were built, because we do the automation for and the electrics for that line. But then I worked for a company called Mineral Environmental that built pollution control equipment. And that was pretty fascinating because I was in automotive plants all over the country, into Canada and in Mexico as well. So that led me to having an understanding of identifying user needs, systems, but then also as sometimes on sales calls and really starting to understand the sales relationship part of how all these things come together as well.
We kind of talked earlier about like how you're kind of known as a big talker and able to you know, push your ideas forward. How important is being a salesman to being in tech right now? We have kind of these bigger people. I think Elon Musk is kind of the quintessential like salesman slash tech professional. But is that kind of the paradigm in tech now?
I would posit, there's a big word. I would argue that the vast majority of folks don't fully understand tech at a foundational level, how tech works and what tech can actually accomplish. And I think that AI has exacerbated that. I'm going to kill in Scrabble this weekend. exacerbated that because people just don't understand what to even ask for. And I think that technologists struggle because they're not known for being the best communicators to have that conversation, to be able to translate what somebody might need in an office space or on a factory floor. I saw this a lot in the automotive industry, right? You'd have the users of the machines who wouldn't talk to the designers of the machines. And that's what actually drove me out. The stupidity of the industry as I was involved in it. And the frustration of that lack of communication of people working on the same team, yet sometimes having adversarial relationships, really frustrated me to the point where, it was good money, but it wasn't fulfilling to the point where I felt like I was making a real difference. So I think that ability to translate between the business needs and what tech can do is foundational now more than ever, because tech can do a lot more than it could even a few years ago. And even a few years ago, people were not fully maximizing what tech could do for them in their industries.
I think that's a very contemporary conversation that we're having. A lot of people, I don't think, understand. I personally don't know everything that AI can do. I think most people, when they talk about AI, they have this understanding that it's, an enhanced Google search, essentially, and maybe creating photos or videos if you're a little bit more in depth. But it sounds like that transition to kind of being the person who can talk to people using the technology and people designing the technology is kind of where you carved your own niche. What inspired you to kind of start up your own company?
So I have always had side jobs and played with, mm-hmm. with things outside of my traditional 9 to 5. I mean, going back to when I worked at, you know, those first jobs at Monroe Environmental, I was actually washing dishes on the weekend because I'd get mm-hmm. bored and was tired of staring at a computer. So I've always had side projects, and I build a lot of tech curriculum. Mm-hmm. I've been in the coding boot camp and tech curriculum, tech instruction space for about a decade now. So Anthony Wayne Innovation and Design really just started, well, I should say Vanderpool Consulting, which is the LLC, mm-hmm. Started the business that was for my technical curriculum building and instruction. And then Anthony Wayne Innovation and Design became a DBA of that, specifically because I knew I was going to start hanging out downtown at the Toledo Tech Loft, and I wanted to have something that was regionally identifiable, and the name Anthony Wayne seems to be all over the place. And really just this idea of innovation and design, as somebody who's been downtown Toledo, Northwest Ohio, into the cornfields, like what we foundationally need here is a better understanding of how the design process works and what innovation is. So my goal is to, and my company's goal, is to work on projects that demonstrate how we communicate and get stuff done when there's multiple players in the space, from municipalities to tech folks to design folks to business folks. That communication and alignment between all those organizations that have to at some point nod to say yes, mm-hmm. that's what my company tries to do. Make it easy for people to say yes to good ideas.
Excellent. And then right now I'd like to kind of disclose that you actually have done some work for us at the Toledo Free Press a little bit.
Yes.
You've worked along with our editor, Aaron Holden, and you've kind of redesigned our website a bit.
Yes. Yeah. Aaron's awesome, by the way. When you see her, tell her I said that.
Aaron does a good job for us, and you did too. But what is that the bulk of what you kind of do there, or do you do website? Do you redesign websites, or what do you do?
So there are so many web design companies out there that mm-hmm. they're – if you need a web design done, don't talk to me. I can, well, talk to me and I'll point you to the people who can actually help make it happen. There's so many people in the region that do a phenomenal job of it. Where you would use me is a design thinking session where folks would come in and talk about their ideas, talk about other things that they like. I help people take their ideas and put them into a form, a piece of paper, a document that then they can take to the people who do the work for them, right? Because I have that ability to communicate with all these different audiences to be able to translate the idea in somebody's head and put it into an actionable piece of documentation then that can be used, where our technologist folks, you walk up to them, say, hey, build me an app that does this. They're not going to build you the app that does that in the way that is envisioned in your head. Mm. I specialize in taking an idea and turning it into a reality. I may not be the one who makes it real, but I'm somebody who will ideate and make it real enough along the way to turn over a prototype to somebody who's going to then build out the actual version of it. Like we did with the Toledo Free Press web design, myself and my students kind of worked together, ideated, came up and did some research on existing comparable news delivery platforms. I had a great conversation with Aaron, and then that led to us building, using AI, honestly, to build a prototype of what your website will look like. Mm-hmm. That then was turned over to Justin Beaudry's team over at Toledo Codes in order to be able to actually build out the website.
That is an incredible ability to translate that information. What are there other examples of projects that you've really enjoyed working on and kind of being that go-between like the people who make it happen and what the client actually wants?
So the batting cleanup is my favorite right now, because what I love more than anything is I love when people tell me, like, that's hard to work with those people, or you're never going to be able to get that done, right? I'm like, no, I will prove you wrong, right? And I think a lot of it comes from where people try to make things happen from their own perspective and not necessarily understanding the perspective of others. So this batting cleanup project, right, it's working with Keep Toledo Lucas County Beautiful. Adam Cassie is the reason that this project is moving forward. Having conversations with Connect Toledo and Christine Michaels, both of those organizations are foundational to what we're doing. Tangentially, right, making sure the city of Toledo and Megan Robson and those folks were all informed of what we're doing because of mm-hmm. it being done inside of the city. Right, really making sure we're communicating, over communicating, providing the information about what we're doing so people don't get blindsided, especially in mm-hmm. positions of power. Nobody likes to, what are they doing over there? We're making sure that everybody kind of knows up front what we're doing before we make a social media post, before we do things. I hope I've done a really good job articulating that this project that we're working on of putting QR codes on trash receptacles to help with pickup is like in a design phase right now, which is why you only see one out live in the wild. Once we've learned enough from this, we're going to expand it to 5, 10, 100, and eventually all 300 trash receptacles that are downtown. So really, it's just this ability to understand, not just like that people know what you're doing, but talking to people enough so that what you're doing, you have an understanding of how it's going to impact them. So you can refine what you're doing to make sure it's not going to screw up other people's day. Because that's what makes them say no and stop.
Yeah, and that sounds like a fairly large initiative right now. I think we're going to just take a small break and then we'll be back with more. And we're back at Toledo Works. We're talking to Mike Vanderpool, who's talking about this project where individuals around Toledo can alert the government to where cleanups need to happen. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. And we're not alerting the government.
We're not alerting the government?
No, we're not alerting the government. It's a weird ecosystem. Downtown and the city of Toledo, like there's a lot of different districts and layers and organizational structure. The Connect Toledo is who we're working with on this directly as their ambassador program, I believe, is in charge of managing the receptacles and the cleanup. The city obviously tangentially involved and aware because it's the city. Mm-hmm. And then the notifications. So the way that the project works is you would scan a QR code on the receptacle, nice mm-hmm. little screen that Toledo Codes built, pops up and you can identify that it needs to be picked up. That is going to send a notification eventually to an organization called Block by Block that actually does the processing of the tickets for that service.
Okay. So there are a lot of moving parts going on. This sounds like the ultimate in keeping everybody on the same page.
Correct.
So how have you been able to do that? I mean, like there's a lot of moving pieces, especially, you know, I interface with our county and city government quite often, and they do, they have a lot of initiatives to let people know what's going on. How have you been able to manage not only kind of the public perspective, the government perspective, but also, you know, independent companies involved in that?
We had an initial conversation with and Adam Cassie of Keep Toledo Lucas County Beautiful was really instrumental in pulling the initial stakeholders together, right? Mm-hmm. We had that initial meeting, Justin, myself, folks from Connect Toledo, folks from the city council were there, and we really just threw out the idea on the table and had people provide feedback, right? Hearing what these other organizations mm-hmm. thought and how it might impact them, understanding the wider ecosystem that this would fit into was instrumental. And then everyone who was there and then anyone that they identified should be on the communication email. Like about once a month, I will send out an update of what's going on with the project. From there, we pulled off the people who are the marketing representatives for those companies into a separate email list. So anytime a social media post would go out, they would get notified before it went out, awareness to be able to check and say, are we saying the right things, right? Because again, with all of the different pieces and moving parts, making sure we're not stating the wrong thing that could cause somebody to have a phone call that they have to deal with is what we're trying to avoid, right?
And that sounds like a pretty amazing way to do that, just to be able to have everything kind of rubber stamped before it goes anywhere.
Just awareness, right?
Yeah.
And being conscious and considerate that what you're doing impacts other people, I think is super, super important. I learned that working at the college, Northwest State University, when I was out there and making things happen, right? You wanted to throw an event. It was the business office. It was facilities. It was leadership. It was a lot of entities, organizations, departments mm-hmm. that were going to be impacted by it. And the last thing, the first thing I learned was if you irritate the facilities folks, you're not going to have the room set up like you wanted. So they had to be we designed and laid out the map of how things would be set up and said, hey, facilities, come give us feedback on this setup. Does this work for you? Or is there anything else we can do to make your life easier when you have to set this thing up. So again, initially communicating, working through the design process of building quick, easy prototypes that people have an understanding of what you're doing in a physical space versus just words in the air makes it so much easier for people to provide feedback because that feedback is crucial. People are heard, they appreciate that. And you avoid sometimes, you know, stepping on toes or saying something that you shouldn't say because it could be misconstrued based on information that you don't know, right? I have no idea all the projects that the city is working on. They may be tangential to this. It may be easy for it to be confused. We might have to use specific language, or we may use a word that they're already using someplace else. Like, just again, offering people the opportunity, offering the stakeholders the opportunity to have feedback into what you're doing before you do it, I've found is much easier to find success that way, working with multiple organizations, multiple stakeholders.
And a lot of what you do is based around collaboration. Where do you find these people to collaborate these days in Toledo?
The Toledo Tech Loft and the office in Toledo is the place where I've honestly made the most connections over the past year. So Chris Eichen got the key to that space from Dave Ball. Dave Ball is doing amazing things in our community. And that space right there, that's where I ran into Brent Kuzno, who was an early guest on my podcast, the Make It Happen podcast, if I'm allowed to mention that. We had a holiday mixer there, which brought our tech and design folks together. That's where I first met Valerie Thompson. She was my actual first guest on my podcast. She and I talked for 3 hours, probably could have gone for six or seven. And it's just been like being downtown in that space that's open and designed for collaboration has really connected me to, you know, Adam Cassie, and the conversation that led to this batting cleanup idea. Everybody that I've mentioned, Christine Michaels, a lot of those conversations, you know, talking to Tom Hamway, RGP, who I've met down at the Toledo Tech Loft, like that energy and that space intersection there at Adams and North Superior with Imagination Station down on one end by the water, all the way up to Mad Ave and what the Innovation Post is kind of in the uptown area, like that space right there has so much good energy and so much of the foundation for innovation. It's got a lot of caffeine. It's got a lot of bars, right? A lot of coffee shops, a lot of bars. there is like an energy there that I'm kind of declaring as the innovation corridor of where cool people do cool things. And from there, we can just spread out all the rest of the different parts of downtown. But like that for me, having that space where people can come collaborate and is designed for collaboration is foundational to any type of innovation and design that's going to be beyond the norm of what you would typically find in a downtown location.
I think people have kind of a glorified understanding of, you know, some of the earlier tech moguls like Steve Jobs. You know, Steve Jobs had a little bit of collaboration. He had Wozniak and Steve, you know, like the design side and then the coding side. It sounds like what you're talking about and where we are in the modern day requires a lot more people, a lot more hands working together. Is that fair to say?
Well, we have to like really understand why did a lot of this innovation come out of Silicon Valley, right? Why does a lot of innovative things come out of New York, right, in the coast? Well, because you have a lot of people and a lot of ideas bumping into each other, right? I'm going to argue Southern California also benefits from a lot of sunshine and probably a handful of drugs, but the proximity, right, of good ideas bumping into each other, that's what makes ideas better, right? One of the coolest things we have in Northwest Ohio is we have legitimate green fields to build on, but what that also then the con to that is we have a lot of space between us, where a great idea in Henry County may synergize with a great idea in Fulton County, but if those two people and those two ideas never meet, those two ideas are less likely, I would argue, to become reality. Having a space, physical spaces in downtown Toledo, maybe downtown Napoleon, maybe downtown Defiance, that all have this like connective tissue between them, that is what we would need as a region to honestly be somebody who could not compete, but complement with the three C's, right? We don't want to be Columbus. We don't want to be Cleveland. We don't want to be Cincinnati. How do we be the Toledo that does cool stuff with those other bigger cities in Ohio? So space is so important because without that space, like Toll House, right? We've got Tech Night at Toll House that happens. That's a great place where we socialize and ideas can run into each other. That is what I would argue, and I teach and live in academia, so don't come at me, folks. That is not happening on our college campuses in the way that it probably should across multiple disciplines. College campuses, they have silos, they're all compartmentalized. You've got engineers working with engineers. You don't necessarily have all of the different groups that are required to make cool stuff happen bumping into each other. So we have to create those spaces where ideas can bump into each other, be tested, be told that, hey, maybe this isn't the best idea, but somebody over here is doing something similar. Why don't you help them out? I think that is what, if we want to move forward, that's what we need more than anything else, more places where cool ideas can bump into each other.
And it sounds like that's happening at the Toledo Tech Loft for y'all.
Not just there. It's going on in other pockets. But what we need to do is make more awareness and connect more of the pockets where it's happening for sure.
Excellent. Thanks for being on the show, Mike. Yeah. And up next, we will be talking to Justin Beaudry.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Toledo Works. I'm your host, Steven Zenner. I'm talking with Justin Beaudry. He's the founder of Toledo Codes and also the director of engineering at Actual Reality Technologies. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Now, we just talked to Mike Vanderpool, who you also know as a contributor to the technology space. And he is from the region, but you are not from the region. Where did you start out?
Oh, I actually am from Toledo.
You are from the region. Yep. Oh, sorry. I've just kind of looked at some of your things. But you've traveled to Texas and to the West Coast and all sorts of...
Yes.
What were your experiences like there?
Yeah. So I think I left in 2005. I was in Texas, you know, between 2007 and 2011, 12, which was in Austin particularly, which was a really interesting time because it was a very fast growing city. At the time, it's not on my LinkedIn, but I was working in the film industry as an assistant director and very creative focused. And then actually in Texas, in Austin, there is really where I was doing some freelance development work. That's really where my development journey in terms of developing software started. And then got some opportunities in about 2013 in the San Francisco Bay Area to work in EdTech, which was my goal. And I worked for Creative Live, which was a startup around that time, for about 5-6 years. And then I worked for a few other companies. And then during the pandemic, you know, I was in my apartment in Berkeley, you know, in Oakland, but right next to Berkeley, and just realized, why should I pay all this money to sit in my apartment? I'll just go back home for some time and reassess. And that's when I kind of had my epiphany of, you know, really starting Toledo Codes, you know, building a tech community here. Yeah, it was a very interesting time between Austin and San Francisco and then the pandemic.
Sounds like you've kind of tried your hand at a lot of different specialties or professions. Is that fair to say, or have you been doing about the same thing?
About the same thing, yeah.
Just in some different industries.
Correct. Yes.
So, what is kind of the base of what it is that you do in the technology sphere?
Yeah. So, you know, right now I'm the director of engineering at Actual Reality Technologies, and we're a local startup mainly focusing around artificial intelligence and machine learning for manufacturers, primarily for glass manufacturers. So historically, my role has been, you know, I will typically work with a product team they'll do the customer journey. They'll do some of the discovery that Mike was talking about, understanding the user's needs. And then I would effectively implement that. And it started mainly doing front end. So like the thing that you click on and touch the apps. I started working on those aspects initially. And it transitioned over time to running my own team, you know, so now I have to like oversee some engineers, doing a bit more of like the back end and infrastructure side of things. And that's really where it kind of went from there. I think I've jumped from doing ed tech to like, I worked for a company called Jet Insight and did some, and United Airlines. So doing a little bit of airline, you know, that was on their technical operations team. So just doing some more of the back of house type of things. But these days, you know, it's mentoring engineers. So, you know, effectively saying we bring in a lot of college interns. So it's, you know, teaching them how to think about how we build things. Because, and this isn't a dig at the universities or in computer science education, but the computer science education doesn't tell you how we build software in the real world. It's a very different. We have a whole process that we go through with it, in terms of breaking it down and in terms of even in terms of how we build things, mm-hmm. because due to the abstract nature of code, there are a lot of ways to do things, but there are ways that we can all agree upon together to do things.
Yeah,
and that's the bit that the universities don't teach. So we do. I teach a little bit of that, and I do some hands-on coding myself and interfacing with clients.
Excellent. When you talk about coding, there's a lot of as you're already saying, there's a pipeline to creating an app. There's a pipeline to creating code. Are you working on user interface? What would people be able to kind of latch onto with what you're coding, other than like being like I made this, you know?
Yeah. So I mean, you know, I'm a little bit of a polyglot. I write a lot of different programming languages. Right. I touch a lot of different aspects of it. So, you know, I'm and right now it's a big chase on AI. Primarily, what I'm doing these days is building applications that leverage AI in some meaningful way. Mm. But specifically, what are you asking? I guess as
when you are creating an app, or like when you have created an app in the past, and we can jump into kind of what you're working on now too. That'd be cool. But when you are working on an app, are you designing it from front to like from the back to the front? Are you working on just kind of the calculations, or are you also involved in like the full experience of the app, like into the design materials and into that kind of
thing? I am full spectrum. So I start from the beginning, understanding the user's needs, translating those into the requirements, functional and non-functional. So functional requirements are, it can do this, you know, if I have an app that is recording podcasts or, you know, managing recordings, I can click a button to record and click a button to add an audio file there. And a non-functional requirement of that is like, it needs to load in less than 5 seconds, right? So I will break down those things, break that down into work to say like, here's the work that needs to be done. I'll phase that out in a Gantt chart to say this is how long we think it's going to take.
And can you just go over what a Gantt chart is?
Yeah, fair. It's just a chart that shows like, you know, you could think of it as like you have these bars that represent with the months at the top.
Yeah.
You know, the months at the top, and it's a bar that goes across. This project is going to take 2 months. Okay. This project is going to take 3 months.
So managing projects. Yeah.
Managing projects, but then also implementing some of the, you know, I'll typically handle infrastructure. At Actual Reality, we're a small company, so I will do front end, back end infrastructure whilst doing all those other things as well.
What it sounds like to me is if I had an idea, you're the one who could be, okay, we're going to have this done by this date and this part, and these are all the different parts that we need to put together. And then by, you know, next year, we'll have a usable application.
Yeah. Correct. And I'd first start with translating your requirements.
Yeah.
And then I would choose some, or maybe put something together so you could look at it and play with it. And then choose some technologies, because technologies are just tools, right? And there's a lot of neat tools out these days. And then, build it end to end and make sure it meets what you're looking for.
With Toledo Codes, is that the same vein, or is that more of a mentoring situation?
So Toledo Codes is initially started because it was a selfish reason, and I'll be honest. And the selfish was that when I lived in Silicon Valley in San Francisco, I had the opportunity to go to tons of meetups. I would go to meetup.com all the time, go to the Google developer offices, go in Google's offices, go in Facebook offices, and just meet really brilliant people who would have these amazing presentations. And eventually some of them became startups. So it was very exciting. They're sharing something interesting they're working on. And so selfishly, I wanted that here in Toledo. And a bit of my epiphany was, and just to back up a little bit, I was riding, I do a lot of long distance bike riding, riding my bike down River Road, and realized, you know, how beautiful this place really is, and how we're this interesting coastal mid-sized city that is way smaller than it should be. So I wanted some of that energy, and not to say that I think Toledo needs to be Silicon Valley. It's something different.
Right.
But what I wanted was that same sort of excited energy to have folks come in and talk about things they're working on locally. Because there are, people don't know it, but there are hundreds of people who are building really neat things right here in Toledo. And some of them work for large companies, some of them do it on their own. And so it was, I wanted to, you know, we have what we call user groups, right, for WordPress. And, you know, there is WordPress Toledo, there's Toledo Web Professionals, there are other user groups for like the 365 Office things, for VMware, all these other aspects. But those had, with the pandemic, those had really all died. They had, they weren't really meeting up anymore. So Toledo Codes was my solve for this. I said, it's kind of a one meetup to rule them all, with the hope that eventually we go into the background and just facilitate other people to start their own user groups. And so it's tech talks, it's demos, it's networking, and that's the goal. And we're going to be doing more workshops this year. So definitely very different than what I'm doing normally. But I'm excited about it nonetheless.
With creating Toledo Codes, are you hoping to kind of open up? Yeah, you're just kind of opening up different ideas for people to work on. And I kind of wonder if you're, you know, you traveled quite a bit. You went to the West Coast and to Texas, and you tried your hand on a lot of different things. Was that infrastructure here when you were interested in getting into tech, were you able to find those people, or is this kind of a project that has grown out of like what you wish you had back when you were coming up through tech? Is that part of it?
It's definitely part of it. It is a little bit of the wish list. It's also a little bit of taking what I've seen works. So, you know, the meetups pre-2020, pre-pandemic, were, they have had a lot of people. There was a lot of money coming into there. So there's free food, free drinks. You get a lot of community. And I think there's a ton of benefit for that. And that's really the goal, is to create that community. With the goal, like I didn't mention the other part of Toledo Codes, which I'll get to in a second, which is the fellowship program we're working with the Free Press on to help build the website. But it is just looking at these models that already I work in these other cities and thinking about it, like, how can that work here? Right. And that's right. Why we're kind of combining all the groups together and then spark ideas, right? A lot of ideas have come about from these, just having folks come in. So for example, there's a developer, his name is Jeremy Schroeder. Jeremy was the mayor of Weston, Ohio for like 10 years or so, who happened to be a fantastic developer.
Yeah, we did a story on him and his son.
That's right. Ollie and Jeremy have OJ Tech together.
Yeah.
And they're one of those success stories that I think the Tech Loft and Toledo Codes brought about, because they, you know, Jeremy was working at Off Contact and is a fantastic developer. He'd been doing it for fun for years. And so that's what I want to see more of, and I'll tell you, the grand vision for Toledo Codes is we're inspiring the middle schoolers to see what technology can do, to then go to a particular high school program, inspiring the high school kids to see what tech can do, getting them involved in building things, right? Because project-based learning, you know, I find is my preferable way of learning, and research does show it tends to be others as well.
Yeah.
Inspire them to get them into the local universities, right? BGSU, UT, Lourdes, Defiance College, wherever that might be. And to have Toledo Codes programs working where we can build civic projects, which is what Batting Cleanup is, right? That's a civic project we're building for free. We're not charging any, we're not making any money from this stuff. In fact, we're spending money with the goal of building that up. And then over a couple of years of doing this, hopefully we can inspire more people, maybe get some money so that we can expand the program and we can hire someone full time, something like that. But that's the grand vision, is that we can have this pipeline and then eventually from the colleges to workforce, right? Like, how can we bridge that gap, that education gap I mentioned earlier, and then help them get placed in a job here in Toledo, right? To help kind of prevent a little bit of the brain drain.
Yeah, it sounds like you're laying a pretty robust infrastructure for people to come up and kind of follow in your footsteps, but also do so contributing to the Toledo community.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Excellent. We're going to just take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more from Justin Beaudry. Welcome back to Toledo Works. I'm your host, Stephen Zenner, and I'm talking here with Justin Beaudry. You have your hands in a lot of different projects. One of them is the AI Collective. You're the regional manager for the Midwest for that project. Can you kind of talk a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, so the AI Collective is an international group that's effectively, the goal is to say, to talk about the responsible usage of AI and effectively how can we make these tools available for everyone. And so I started the local chapter, and then now I'm managing the entirety of the Midwest with the goal of expanding throughout Ohio.
And this is a pretty topical subject. I think people are interested in what technology can do for them. I think there is a lot of confusion around data centers, how it affects the environment, how it affects a number of different resources, and what we have in terms of water and electricity. But what does I don't think I've heard anybody really talk about managing kind of the appropriate use of AI or doing so responsibly. And what does that look like?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's very, very complicated, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I think we can try to distill these things down to a number. I've seen some reports come out and say each query you make with the model is using X amount of water. That's very, very difficult to do because there's the training and the mm-hmm. actual usage when you're actually querying the model or talking to the ChatGPT or whatever. And so really what this looks like is about, it's less about how do we manage, how do we save on water and electricity, because these are very tough problems that the intelligent people who are building these systems are thinking about, right? They're thinking about sustainable ways mm-hmm. to host these models and to run them in inference, which is what we call that when you're talking to ChatGPT. But what we're really focused on with the AI Collective is in terms of setting up responsible governance models locally in your company. So having like a stoplight pattern to make sure, prevent shadow IT, you know, folks from just using ChatGPT, sharing private data with ChatGPT, right? You have to kind of think about that holistically. And then as well, it gets, talk about, you know, the video models and image generation. There's obviously some large, and music generation, there's a lot of questions around that in terms of the ethics of it. And it's a very, very difficult problem. But mainly we're focused on the ethics in terms of personal usage and professional usage.
Keeping companies and users safe when they use
Correct.
AI, is that fair to say?
Yes.
And I know that there are a few different stories in the news about, AI being kind of super charging different people who destroy websites or who use phishing scams or who do different things like that. Do you touch on those kinds of things?
We get into, not necessarily, okay. Because we're primarily focused on the not necessarily the bad actor use cases. Mm-hmm. I know the cybersecurity groups are thinking about that. We're more focused on the everyday people okay. for how you use these tools, right? Because there's always going to be bad actors, and every new technology has a race between the white and the black hats, so to speak.
Right.
Or the good and bad actors.
The good and bad actors within AI. It sounds like kind of what we might have wanted for millennials back in the year 2000 or something like that. Like, is it just not putting your information out there? Or what are kind of the things that you go over, a few of them?
I think it's a few parts, right? Like, understanding with each of the different tools. Because really, AI is a tool. Right. That's all it is. I think there will be job losses. Yes, we can talk about that at some point if we like, maybe not here. But it's really about understanding the tools. And so in each tool, there's a settings that you can say, is this sharing my data? You should be mindful that that's an option. Right. Mm-hmm. Learning when to use the different tools. So I think for me, responsible AI is knowing when it's okay to use it and when it's not. I also think it's about being authentic and clear with your usage of it, because it should not be hidden. I shouldn't use AI and then say, this is my work, right? I think that's a very, very important point. And then as well, it's really about learning what the tools, all the different tools. That's what our focus is on, is like as a region, here are the tools that are available. Here's how you can use them. Mm. Here's how you can establish a policy within your company, big or small. And here are the different options that are out there in that regard.
Yeah. And this is an emerging technology. Are there kind of a list of like ethical behaviors that people can go through? Is there like a list of, do you watermark your work like with like a, or if an email is sent with AI, do you have like a little thing that, you know, on certain phones, they say, you know, this was sent with such and such a phone. Are we going to see those kinds of disclaimers at the bottom of emails or anything like that? This email was sent with AI. Is that a possibility, or is that being talked about right now?
I haven't heard it talked about, but it definitely, I think that should be the case, right? Like, we should be authentic and clear with our usage of the tool.
When you do work with either any of your projects, like whether you're building an app, do you have that kind of in your code, or do you have like that you've created with AI, is that like kind of clearly labeled, or?
Good question. Yeah, I mean, so we tell our clients up front, you know, any of the client work I'm doing, that we will be leveraging AI, to the point that if you're a software developer in 2026, everyone will be using it in some way or fashion, whether that's through fancy autocomplete or complete agentic development, which means you're letting it do its thing and then you come and look at it afterwards. There are lots of ways you can use these tools where it can go off and operate on its own, and you can even send them off. You know, I have some things that I fire off at night while I'm sleeping, and then I look at them in the morning, right? So it's always an upfront disclosure in terms of like, I will be using AI as a part of this process, but we always have a human evaluating the output. I think that's the consistency across anything you're doing with the tool, is there's a human evaluating it. If you're generating the email, if you're generating an email, I do it. I mean, I'll be honest. I do it with a Slack message.
Right.
I don't disclose that I do that over a Slack message. So it's an interesting point, because I usually use it to translate my feelings to make sure I'm not, my tone is not in any particular way, right?
So you type in like, make a pleasant tone or something like that.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. How much has AI kind of changed your coding? I know that, you know, a number of years ago, coding was kind of like, learn how to code and you'll be set, and you'll have kind of a set. How much is AI changing the back end of developing apps and things like that?
So 6 months ago, Dario, who's the CEO of Anthropic, said 90% of code will be developed by AI. I thought he was wrong. He was right. Does that mean that AI will replace software developers? I think it will displace the sort of mediocre developers. I think that will happen, because there's going to be a push for quality, right? There's more a need for new tools, more need for these things. So there will always, software is never done, right? You have to kind of define what that done looks like.
Okay.
So there's always I think there will always be roles for this, but it has changed so rapidly. This 2025 was wild. I changed my workflow every 2 months. I don't know anyone in their career who does that, right? Like, it's just, it changes that rapidly. Even after a couple months ago, when Google dropped Gemini 3, I changed my workflow again. And it's you have to constantly be evaluating, as a developer, you have to constantly look at the different tools that are available and what they can do for you, because there are a lot of fantastic tools that can make your job easier, make your output quality higher, et cetera.
Has that allowed you to push projects forward more quickly? Like, is that every 2 months, are you able to kind of reevaluate what your output is?
Yes. Yeah. I do a little bit of a weekly retrospective for myself. So I track my time via, you know, I use Screen Time. So I have a Claude MCP, which is, I can talk to my screen time and I reflect on what I've spent my time on. Yes. And I could see that these tools are great for that, right? It's fantastic usage for it. And my output is scaled. Like, I think in the last week, I prototyped a video game, built my own calorie tracking tool, I'm a big board game player. So I built there's a website called Board Game Geek. I built a Board Game Geek Wrapped for, about the board games you played throughout the year. So yeah, I mean, it just gives me the opportunity to be creatively expressive in ideas that I have to see, is this worth pursuing, you know? And mm-hmm. and I'm constantly seeing and figuring out different things I can build. So it's just been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun. And then for my work at Actual, it's also been fun because we're able to mm-hmm. push our standards for a small team.
Do you understand kind of the pushback, this almost Luddite movement that we're kind of seeing kind of take hold, where people are kind of pumping the brakes on this incredibly fast changing industry?
Well, I would say is, do I understand it? Yes and no. When I wear my empathetic hat, mm-hmm. I can understand mm-hmm. where people are coming from. But I also think back to typesetters were very upset when mm-hmm. we digitized that. Did they stop innovation there? No. That isn't to say that AI is completely different technology. It's probably one of the largest leaps we've had in decades. Mm-hmm. And it can be used for good and bad. Now, I think we need to be having more conversations about it. We can't just pause it. You can't tell these companies, stop innovating on this technology. It is here to stay. And so it is now a question of how do we educate people to be able to use these tools? How do we make sure that we put the proper restraints? You know, it's funny. I have a problem with AI-generated music personally, but I don't have a problem with AI-generated video. I don't understand it in my own brain, but I can understand that other people will have those issues as well, right?
Mm-hmm. It is a very nuanced retrospective as we try and kind of progress to the next technologies and don't get pulled down behind other companies, other nations, and as we kind of move into the future. Thanks for being on, Justin.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it was great to have you here. I'm Steven Zenner, and this was Toledo Works.
Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.